welcome to the Valor Podcast. I'm Nick Lehman. I want to tell you a little story about me growing up. I was once in my uncle's office, and we were just standing there talking about life and things of that nature. And I noticed all of the awards he had on his office wall and even on his desk. They were all from his Navy career. It was a short career, maybe 3 or 4 years. And I said, "Hey, Uncle Dwayne, did you win those awards?" And my uncle's a pretty fun, jovial guy, and with a dead serious look, he said, "No, I earned those." So this episode, I want to talk to you about medals and how they work in the military and how important they are to our United States and what they mean to our community. First, we're going to go to our sponsors. New Mexico Stockman Magazine is our show sponsor. They're a great publication for people in the agricultural business and private property advocates looking to get their message out and keep up to date on industry news. We are joined by Doug Sterner. He joined the U.S. Army in 1969 and was part of 2 tours in Vietnam. Following active duty, Doug was a member of the National Guard in Montana. Today, he's an active in military and veteran affairs. He writes and contributes to military and American history. Him and his wife also contribute to many veteran organizations, and just reading their bio, his website is homeofheroes.com and has been dubbed as the nation's leading website for information about patriotism, the Medal of Honor, and military history. Doug, thanks for joining us.
Good to be on with you today.
I want to ask you, in your history, I mean, you're quite a storyteller with all the books and things that you've come across. I know this seems kind of out there, but what medal that was created by the United States military kind of was like, wow, that's a pretty special one, or that was a pretty unique process in how they created that medal?
Well, there's actually two that stand out to me. The first one is the Purple Heart, and the second one is the Prisoner of War Medal. That's probably not the answer you were expecting to get from the man who's probably the foremost historian of the Medal of Honor, but those are the two awards that stand out the most to me.
No, I think it goes pretty good on it because, I mean, prisoner of war, that's a very hard, life that happened in your military career, and the Purple Heart, you know, that story is very similar. What kind of things in that did you find that, you know, kind of set that medal as your two, or those two medals as your favorite, or not favorite, but you know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, military medals can basically be broken down into 3 different categories. Most obviously, we think of the Valor Awards, such things as the Purple Heart or the Service Crosses or the Medal of Honor, which is America's highest award. These are awarded for exceptional heroism in combat situations. There are also valor medals, such as the Soldier's Medal and its counterparts in the other services, for heroism during peacetime in a life-saving situation. So there are the valor medals, number one. Secondarily, there are the achievement and campaign ribbons. Basically, you know, we often refer to them as "I was there." You know, I got a Vietnam campaign medal because I was in Vietnam. I didn't have to do anything other than be there, so that's why we call them the I Was There Medal. And then there are 2 medals that are presented not for what you do, not for where you were. The Purple Heart, which is awarded for wounds received in combat or death as a result of combat, and the Prisoner of War Medal, which is awarded to those who are captured and held as POWs. Those 2 medals stand out to me because they represent one thing and one thing only, and that is personal sacrifice. The person that got that Purple Heart lost an arm, lost an eye. They were grievously wounded or even killed. The person who got the POW medal was interred, held, probably tortured, certainly suffered deprivation. So while some medals represent doing something great or being heroic or just being there, those 2 medals represent one thing only. That person that wears that Purple Heart or that POW medal made a personal sacrifice, a great personal sacrifice, in response to their answer to the call of duty.
And going on that, you know, all the there's different kind, like you said, ribbons and medals. At what point did you, in your service or even your post-service, were very drawn to the history of our military and you know, offering all these contributions that you had?
Well, quite frankly, after I got out of the service in 1972 and then a couple years in the Guard, I never really gave a whole lot of thought to medals and awards or even the military. I was not greatly involved in veterans activities for some 20 years. Back in 1993, my wife and I started promoting patriotic programs in our hometown of Pueblo, Colorado. And as a part of that, we started bringing in Medal of Honor recipients. And so as a doing due diligence to that, bringing in these men who are America's greatest heroes, I started researching the Medal of Honor, trying to find the stories of the men that we were bringing in so that they could be shared. And so that's when I first really started taking a look at the award system. You know, I never gave a whole lot of attention to it myself during my time in service. Nobody goes into the service, well, that's not really true. I mean, some soldiers go in and say, I'm going to go kick butt and I'm going to come home with a chest full of medals. But when you're in theater, when the doo-doo hits the fan, you're not thinking about medals. You're thinking about survival and the survival of your comrades.
And not having your gun malfunction or jam.
Yeah, those are, you know, veterans talk about their dreams and our post-traumatic stress disorder and all that. And, you know, I have some vivid dreams myself, I guess, still, you know, many, many decades later. And my most common nightmares are being in a combat situation and my rifle jams or is out of ammunition.
Well, yeah, I think that's everybody's nightmare in a dream in a firefight or any kind of dream firefight. When you were researching the Medal of Honor, you know, I read a lot of them, a lot of the citations. I mean, we've had a couple recently, some in Vietnam that were just awarded just recently. But, you know, you have the Iraq and Afghanistan guys that are getting them. You read them and it sort of sends chills down your spine. It's very precise in how they tell that story.
Well, the Medal of Honor itself is a very, very representative award. The men who have received it, and one woman, definitely performed great heroic actions in the most dire of circumstances. And yet when you talk to them, they will be the first to say that I wear this medal on behalf of all the others whose actions were not recognized. And so the Medal of Honor recipients serve a dual function. They are, first and foremost, our Knights of the Round Table, if you will, our greatest military heroes, the individuals whose actions inspire us as a new generation to rise up when we're confronted with unusual circumstances and be at our best. But they also serve to represent all of the others who were there with them. Military service is teamwork. Great is ever achieved by one person alone, and the Medal of Honor recipients are cognizant of the fact that they themselves were a part of a team, and they wear that medal on behalf of the others. In fact, if I could share a brief vignette along that line, one of my closest friends in the world is someone whose name came up in our conversation last week, Peter Lemon. Peter Lemon got the Medal of Honor for his actions on April Fool's Day, April 1st, back in 1971 at Fire Support Base Illingsworth. When I first met Pete in the early 1990s, the only time Pete had ever worn his Medal of Honor was when it was presented to him by President Richard Nixon. His Medal of Honor was in a shoebox in his closet. Pete was in the mid-90s visiting his old lieutenant from Vietnam who was living in California. And the two of them were walking down the beach, and the lieutenant asked him, he said, "Well, Pete, where is your Medal of Honor?" And Pete says, "Well, it's in the shoebox in my closet." And his lieutenant said, "Well, you know, what's it doing there?" And Pete says, "It doesn't belong to me. It belongs to all of the men that were there, and especially to Nathan Mann, Casey Waller, and Brent Street, the three men who were killed in that same action." His lieutenant looked at Pete, and he said, "Pete, There were 18 men in that area on that night. And every one of those men deserved the Medal of Honor. But I knew that I could not submit 18 men for the Medal of Honor, and so I looked at all of the men and all of what had been accomplished, and I had to ask myself, who will best wear that medal on behalf of all of us? And I decided that you were the person that would best represent us all. And that's why I selected you to submit for the Medal of Honor. But as long as that Medal of Honor is in your closet, it doesn't belong to anybody. And that was kind of Pete's epiphany moment. And subsequently, he began to wear his Medal of Honor. And that's why today, I and many others who know Pete can quickly mention the names of Nathan Mann, Casey Waller, and Brent Street, is because when Pete wore that medal, he always told the story of those three comrades he lost in combat, as well as the other men that he served. So the Medal of Honor is a dual-purpose medal in both reflecting what the individual themselves did to receive it, as well as calling into memory their comrades in arms who were with them in that horrible event.
Yeah, going back to the shoebox concept, there's all kinds of people in our community, wherever you are listening and wherever you are in the United States, that served our country, and sometimes there's that shoebox or that old footlocker. It seems like sometimes those memories and those medals are kind of stored away and put in the back and not to be talked about. How important is it to continue that story?
Well, you know, that's a great point. People, when you see a hero that has a medal, the first thing you want to do, as you mentioned with regard to your uncle, is, you know, oh, what did you do to get that medal? Basically, what you're asking that individual is, would you tell me about the worst day of your life? Because Valor Awards, Silver Stars, Service Crosses, Medals of Honor, are not earned on a good day. They are earned on a day when everything is going to hell around you. Your comrades are being injured and killed. You yourself may be injured. It's the kind of day that you want to forget. And so very frequently, those awards represent something that the recipient themselves does not want to talk about very often. But preserving that history is important to new generations. I was speaking at Fort Carson back about 2006, and I was speaking to a group of soldiers who had just come back from Iraq. And after I finished speaking, a young Signal Corps captain came up to me and shook my hand. He said, "Mr. Sterner," he said, "I'm so pleased to meet you." He said, "I've always wanted to meet you." And I thought, why would this guy even know who I was? And he said, "You know, I was sitting on the border waiting for the flare to go off to send us into Iraq. And as I sat there in my vehicle, I kept thinking, what am I going to do? Am I going to do well? Am I going to do poorly? Am I going to be a good commander? Am I going to get men killed? How am I going to react?" And he said, while I was sitting there, I started surfing the internet, which was kind of a culture shock to me, you know, being a Vietnam veteran. We didn't have those kind of things back in my day.
You got telegrams.
He said, I came across the Home of Heroes website, and I started reading the stories of those men who went before me. And I realized they were young men just like me, nervous and scared just like me. And yet they rose to the occasion, and their stories inspired me. And when that flare went off, I knew what I would do, and I was ready to go out and do my job. That is the important role that the stories of these heroes serve. So while it's understandable that many people would not want to talk about how they got their medal, it is also understandable that those accounts need to be preserved for history, for the next generation of warriors that will come along and find something in that hero to identify with.
You're a veteran, and you know, you talk with other veterans and things like that, but how would you advise a family member or a close friend that knows a little bit about their person's military history, and it's like, I think he had the Bronze Star, but he doesn't talk about it. What are some ways of you know, kind of fulfilling that story, getting the background information on it.
Well, you can get the military records of any veteran through Freedom of Information Act, and I highly recommend, very highly recommend, that any family that has a veteran in your family do what you can to get the information on that family member who is a veteran, because it's a part of your family history and it's a part of American history. Perhaps the easiest way to do that is to go to the local office of your congressman or senator. They all have a staff member who understands the process for getting military records. You might be surprised at what you find out. You might find out that dad or grandpa got some rather high awards for doing some rather unbelievable things and preserving that for history. Now, I'd like to speak to the veterans, on the other hand, who are maybe a little bit shy about their awards and hesitant to talk about it. They need to realize as well the importance of what they did, not as something for bragging points or something like that, but for the sake of their family history. And they need to ensure that that is preserved for posterity as well. Those medals aren't about the man or woman that wears them. They're about their kids and their grandkids generations from now that want to know, you know, what did grandpa do in the war? And so we have to get past that reticence to share our military history with our family and make sure that it is preserved as a part of our family history.
That's a really great point. There's that book of Flag of Our Fathers. They didn't know about what the father did until he passed on. They found the shoebox.
Yeah, well, Corman Bradley was known throughout his life as the reluctant hero from the flag raising over Iwo Jima. Anyone who saw the movie Flags of Our Fathers, at the very end of the movie, saw a very, very telling incident. His son is going through his father's personal effects after his death, and in the process, holds up a medal. That medal is the Navy Cross, second only to the Medal of Honor. That was the first time that the family members knew that Corman Bradley, a few days before the incident that made him a national figure, the flag raising, had actually crawled out under fire to treat wounded Marines at Iwo Jima and was awarded the Navy Cross for that action. And so, you know, that's very illustrative of the fact that this family history needs to be properly preserved.
Definitely, and I just have some advice too, is for, you know, anybody that are trying to get information, is research different units, different traditions and things like that, because there was one time where the gentleman was like, I'm not talking about it. And then I said, oh, well, where were you stationed? And he goes, Fort Riley, Kansas. And I said, oh, the big red one. The guy's eyes lit up and he went on for 30 minutes to an hour talking about his old war stories and you know, the people he served with. I was totally shocked that kind of ignited a little story, if you will.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes all it takes is a listening ear. But the other side of it too is you know, we have veterans out there who don't even know that they got high awards. For instance, here about 2 years ago, I got an email from a young man who said, Mr. Sterner, some of my friends suggested that I Google myself. And so I did a Google search on my name, and I wound up at the Military Times Hall of Valor. That's a database that I curate for Military Times. It's an effort to compile and digitize the records for all awards above the Bronze Star. It's not that the Bronze Star isn't important, but there have been about 2 million of them, and I can't get that done, but there have been about 350,000 other high awards above the Bronze Star. And this young man had been in Korea on the DMZ in 1986. He was involved in an action on the DMZ involving a Soviet defector. In 2001, this is, you know, 14 years later, the Army decided to award the four soldiers that were involved in that action the Silver Star. And their commander, Bert Mizuwasha, who is now an Army two-star and a West Point graduate, was tasked with finding the other three men that had served under him. so that their silver stars could be presented. Well, he found two of them. The third one, he was not able to find, and in 2014, that young man happened to find his name in the Hall of Valor, and he was awarded a silver star, and he said, "Holy cow, I didn't know about this." Fortunately, in that case, I was able to connect him with Bert, who by this time was serving in the office of the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And a few months later, all four men were reunited in the office of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the chairman, while the fourth member of that team was presented the Silver Star. So, you know, there have been a number of those kind of incidents that I found over the years in developing my database of individuals who came home, they got on with their lives. Meanwhile, the paperwork mill generated an award that they did not know that they had received.
That's a crazy story. I mean, you're doing your job in 1980s, and you know 20, 30 years later, you get upgraded to the Silver Star. I want to talk a little bit about the essence of the paperwork that goes into these awards and these, you know, Silver Star and all the other ones, the Flying Cross and all that. You know, sometimes the clerk may have not written it up right, but it may lead to a Medal of Honor later down the road. I know we in Iraq and Afghanistan, there's a lot of things being reviewed with some of the actions that happen. How important is it for the clerk that's filling this stuff out to be very detailed in making sure the right award is getting merited?
Well, first and foremost, to that point, I think the situation with the Iraq and Afghanistan veterans isn't the fault of the clerks. It's more the fault of the system. I think it's a system there that has failed them. But to your point, because I think it's an important point, because we as a society have become myopic with regard to the Medal of Honor. We recognize our Medal of Honor recipients, as we should, as America's greatest military heroes. We invite them to speak. We make them the grand marshals of our parades. They are our celebrities. And we tend to forget that there are other awards out there. The Service Cross is the Navy Cross, Distinguished Service Cross, the Air Force Cross. Many times the only difference between a Service Cross and a Medal of Honor is the clerk that wrote up the citation and the after-action report. If I was a commanding officer in any company in the U.S. military, the most important role for me to fill would be to have the best company clerk, because a good company clerk can definitely make the company look good if he knows how to write good citations. But with regard to the war on terrorism, I'm not going to blame that on the clerks. I'm going to blame that more on a system that has failed the men and women who served in Iraq and Afghanistan. Since 2000, as you pointed out, we've had Vietnam War, Korean War, even Civil War heroes whose awards have been upgraded to the Medal of Honor. In most of those cases, the reason cited was that there were minorities who were denied the medal based upon a prejudice, and that is true in many cases. But the fact of the matter is, nearly 100 Medals of Honor have been awarded since 2000. Only 17 of those have been awarded to heroes from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It seems to me that the military system is much, much better at finding overlooked heroes from wars now decades past than it is from finding the heroes in their own midst, and that's a tragedy. In 2012, I actually sent a letter to the Secretary of the Army asking for a review of all awards of the Silver Star and higher in the war on terrorism, and they turned me down. Congressman Duncan Hunter followed up with a similar letter to the Secretary of Defense and was turned down, but I think in the process of time, the military services have begun to see that there is a problem there, and this year did order a review of all Silver Stars and higher to see which awards, if any, should be upgraded. I think we will see some Silver Stars upgraded to Service Crosses, we'll see some service crosses and perhaps even some silver stars upgraded to the Medal of Honor.
That's a really interesting how they're going to get through all that and properly research it. How common is it to have somebody within your state, your city, your county that has some type of, hero award that they earned in the military?
Well, there's 1.5 Medal of Honor recipients for each state, if you want to, give the numbers and break it down that way. There's fewer than 80 living Medal of Honor recipients. On the other hand, we probably have a couple hundred recipients of the Distinguished Service Cross, the Silver Star, the Navy Cross, and the Air Force Cross. And even the Silver Star is no small matter. It's our third highest award for valor, and there are literally thousands of those. So if we get past being myopic about the Medal of Honor and realize Medal of Honor or nothing, and realize that the men who did get these other awards are heroes in their own right, and even awards below that. I mean, I think of Julia Brinlow, who over 3 days saved a dozen people, as a flight medic in Afghanistan, and was awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross. And when I read her citation, I wonder, why wasn't this a Silver Star? But even though it's a Distinguished Flying Cross, she has the distinction of being one of only about a dozen women in history to get the Distinguished Flying Cross. So it's it makes it a unique award. So my message is, I don't care even if it's a Bronze Star. These people are your heroes, and we have plenty of them in every city in America.
Definitely. I mean, you could see them driving around. They have the Bronze Star decal or whatever award that they want to, say that they earned. And so I think that's very cool to see around town and makes me feel patriotic and wow, that guy driving or that girl driving did some heroic stuff that day. I want to kind of shift topics. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I think it needs to be covered. It's kind of the elephant in the room, but stolen valor, I see it all the time on social media and other, sometimes you see it in public and, I've also, the social media things I've seen is I saw one person say, oh yeah, I was an Apache door gunner in Iraq. And I'm like, there's not a door gunner in an Apache. I want to talk about how you helped and your wife craft legislation to make this illegal to steal valor.
Well, stolen valor actually came on my radar through my efforts to try and develop this database of legitimate heroes, because I was inundated with people sending me information citations. My husband's got a Medal of Honor and he's not listed in your website. And I would check it out, and it was a bogus report. And at one point in the early 2000s, we estimated that for every living Medal of Honor recipient, there was 3 phonies out there. So as a result of that, my wife, who is a political science major at Colorado State University Pueblo, wrote a paper that became the basis for the Stolen Valor Act, making it unlawful to claim verbally or in writing to have received any military award that you did not receive. It was landmark legislation. It was hailed as the most sweeping legislation affecting military awards since 1917. Unfortunately, in 2012, that act was struck down by the Supreme Court on the basis that it violated the First Amendment, that the court ruled that claiming to be a Medal of Honor recipient was within the scope of your First Amendment right to free speech. A follow-up bill was passed by the Congress nearly unanimously within a year and is in existence today, but it has some weaknesses and flaws. But the fact of the matter remains, stolen valor continues to be an issue that is important and that comes up very often and has become almost fodder for social media.
I think it's one of the... I'm you know, very patriotic and understand what the military men and women do, and I just think it's very sick and almost a punch in the gut to the men and women that serve that you're going to throw on a uniform and say that you did something that you didn't do. How do you approach somebody that you may think is, you know, stealing valor, and how do you go about sort of exposing them?
Well, you know, that's one of my biggest concerns. You mentioned social media, and social media has almost become a vigilante climate. We got people, you know, out there now that stolen valor has become a game for them. Hey, let's go troll Facebook and see how many phonies we can bust. And it's dangerous territory. Now, fortunately, there are some groups and individuals out there like Anthony Anderson, who operates the Guardians of Valor, Stolen Valor website, who take this seriously, and it's not a game for them. It's a duty, an obligation, and they check it out. But I am concerned to see how many people right now are quick to jump the gun and use Stolen Valor quests as kind of a bullying tactic in social media. It's something you've got to be very, very careful of. I've done a great job of tracking military awards. I thought I had all of the Air Force crosses that have been awarded in Iraq and Afghanistan. I have seven of them. Recent news reports said that 12 are being considered for upgrades, so there's five Air Force crosses right there that are out there that are classified. I know for a fact that there are between 40 and 60 Silver Stars that have been awarded to U.S. Navy SEALs that nobody knows who they are. So, especially as related to people who served in Iraq and Afghanistan, the potential exists for you to walk up to somebody wearing a high award as a Navy Cross or an Air Force Cross and think they're a phony, and for it to be totally legit. So you have to walk very, very softly about these. Now, some of these get into the, you know, really strange stuff, like the door gunner on the Apache example that you use, and that gets far afield from somebody wearing, for instance, a Navy Cross or an Air Force Cross. But even so, we have to be careful about confronting them into a bullying situation. When you see that, you know, it's legitimate to ask the questions, you know, what do you mean you were a door gunner on an Apache? But the military is so screwed up, pardon me for saying that. I mean, I admire these men and women, but the organization today has got so screwed up. If I had run across Julia Brenglow's Distinguished Flying Cross and not known the story behind it, I'd have seen a dozen red flags and said, this has got to be phony as all get out. And yet it's real. So you've got to be very careful about leveling stolen valor charges. And if you suspect it's an egregious case, you need to pass that information on to somebody like Anthony Anderson or a few of the others out there, the This Ain't Hell blog out there, John Lilia, and that group, that take it seriously, but also are professional enough not to jump the gun and risk actually accusing someone who is a legitimate hero or who was legitimately there.
That's such a great point about the bullying and, you know, letting the emotions run high in the moment, if you will. I mean, I know there's been a couple cases where they thought it was stolen valor, but come to find out the guy was actually a Marine or Army or Air Force.
Yeah, one case that stands out was a lady who is a blogger and had a picture of herself next to a vehicle in Iraq and claimed to have led combat troops. And within 48 hours, I mean, the comments on her Facebook page were just absolutely unbelievable. They were vulgar. They were misogynistic. They were the kind of language that bullies use. Fortunately, she, when the first accusations were leveled, went to Guardians of Valor and said, hey, you know, here's my record. Would you validate my claims? And they were professional enough not to get on the bandwagon and start beating her up. They checked her out, and she was legitimate. And so, yeah, there are a number of those cases, and I really, really warn against that, because we do not want to see this turn into a vigilante hunt. And my approach has always been, I would rather see a dozen phonies get away with getting accolades and honors and things that they don't deserve than to unjustly accuse one legitimate hero or one legitimate veteran. And so you've got to walk very softly around this.
How can someone like myself, or, you know, a civilian, kind of get up to snuff on somebody wearing a uniform and understanding how to wear the uniform? Because I know some of the people, they use fake uniforms and fake awards, and you look at it and you know it's not right.
Well, there again, you've got to be very, very careful. You know, one of the red flags over the years that I saw, especially back in the late 90s and early 2000s, was seeing such things as wearing a V device on a silver star. You know, a bronze star can be presented with a V device for valor. It can be presented for achievement without the V device. And I had a number of cases of individuals that I ran across that were wearing silver stars with a V device on it, which was an immediate red flag. They're obviously phony. Yet at the same time, I can point you to, if you go out and Google Woodrow Wilson Keeble, whose DSC was upgraded to the Medal of Honor, you'll see a picture of him wearing a silver star with a V device on it, and that silver star is legitimate. So understand that even old soldiers, old veterans, sometimes make mistakes with their uniform. Sometimes their memory doesn't serve them correctly. Sometimes they just didn't pay enough attention to what was struck when they were in. So they can be red flags when you see something amiss, when you see medals out of order amiss or something like that. It's a red flag that may indicate that the individual is a phony, but at the same time, that's not 100%. So it's, again, why I urge people to be cautious when you see something that doesn't quite ring true, because you could be making a mistake and going after someone who is legitimate.
What about the times that somebody that's in service that kind of exaggerates their service record and their awards? Is that a form of stolen valor?
We all tell war stories. Come on, you know, every veteran has told war stories. I've told war stories. Jed Burkett's told war stories. You know, we all have. There's a difference between a war story and stolen valor. You know, we had a case in Arizona a couple years ago, somebody running for political office. And he was claiming two silver stars, and perhaps the best distinction I've ever heard was someone who was interviewed on the case who said, when this guy claimed, you know, everybody tells war stories, he said, yeah, when you say we were outnumbered 10 to 1 and you were only outnumbered 2 to 1, that's a war story. When you claim two silver stars, that's a damned lie.
Definitely, and I love a good veteran war story. You get the guys around and the girls, and they just, you know, I just sit back and I just listen. I just drink water or whatever's available, and it seems to get better and better through the night. And so it's one of the greatest things that you can do as an American is just sit down with, you know, the veterans and their fellow brothers and sisters and just listen.
Oh, yeah, for us Vietnam veterans, you know, we all love to tell the war stories. Our favorite was the infamous two-step snake. You know, two steps and you were dead. You know, and you see those kind of things, and those are war stories, and you hear them all the time, and they're harmless. But claiming to be a POW when you weren't, claiming to have received awards that you didn't receive, that kind of stuff, that's stolen power.
And I want to ask you, what is your, you have written all kinds of books and history and researched. Give me the top three favorite times in history with military that you found that you were like, this was pretty cool.
Well, of course, I think that the men and women who served in Iraq and Afghanistan are our nation's greatest generation of veterans. I look at what they've achieved, what they've went through, and as a Vietnam veteran, I'll tell you, I had it easy compared to them. I just admire them so much. Furthermore, to a man, to a woman, each and every one of them is a volunteer. I did two tours in Vietnam. Anybody who did more than one tour in Vietnam did so because they volunteered to do so. These men and women have deployed four, five, six times. So, greatest period in history, our men and women in the service today are the most qualified, most trained, most educated, most versatile group of American warriors in our nation's history. And so, to me, I actually look at them and I just stand in awe of what the men and women who fought in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere around the world in the war on terrorism have achieved and accomplished.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, I know it gets politicized and people have their own opinions about it, but when you talk to some of these warriors and what they did, and you sit back and you realize, you know what, they got a lot of intel from a lot of places and were able to connect the dots to a lot of really bad terrorists and were able to either eliminate them or capture them.
They're a great generation. I mean, Pam and I had a book that came out in July. It's called The Defining Generation. I think the Vietnam War veterans, we were the greatest generation of American warriors up to that point. I mean, 2/3 of us were volunteers. We never lost a battle. No unit down to the squad size ever surrendered to the enemy. We were great. And yet the genesis of our book is how our generation, the baby boomers, not just the Vietnam War veterans, but those who opposed the war, looked at American society and rose up in rebellion and changed things for the better. I look today at the millennials that I see, and I see that same spirit, that same willingness to say, just because things have always been this way does not mean that it has to continue this way. And so with that book fresh in my mind, as I've watched events over the last couple of years, and especially in the last year among the group of young people we call the millennials, I see in the veterans that are millennials the same thing that I saw in our Vietnam veterans. I see in the activists of the millennials that same desire and drive that we had in the 60s to address such social injustices as inequality and sexism. And so I'm very proud of our younger generation, and both veterans and non-veterans, and I think that they have great potential to make America even greater.
Well, there you go. You got a person that's in your corner, millennials. He's giving you all the accolades and the props of the next generation. So that was great. You're talking about your books. I can't let you get away without you giving you a time to tell me about your books and Veterans Day or Veterans Week that you're going to be giving away electronic copies to. I say it as a blessing to our nation and the world.
Well, I've spent the last 20-some years developing a database of individuals who received high awards. I currently have about 40 books in print, 17,000 pages. I'm probably the most published military historian that has ever walked the planet. On Veterans Day week, I will be offering all 40 of my military-related books free of charge on Amazon.com. All they have to do is go up and Kindle version that's available. The books are also available in paperback, but they cost money in paperback, but I can give them away. The Kindle version, November 7th through 11th. If you'd like to visit my author page, it's very easy to find. It's amazon.com/author/Sterner. And so, you know, you can build a virtual library just in 1 week, downloading these various books, in addition to about 30-some books of citations. I have a couple other books, like books on Medal of Honor recipients. Included in that are, by the way, 5 books on the war on terrorism. One is a book that has all of the silver stars and higher to members of the U.S. Navy in war on terrorism. another one, all the Marines in the War on Terrorism, another one on Air Force and War on Terrorism. The Army had to break down into two books, one for Operation Iraqi Freedom and the other one for Operation Enduring Freedom. And so those five books, which contain the citations for awards of the Silver Star and higher, will also be available. You can download them free on Kindle. If you don't have a Kindle, you can still download them and read them on any computer or your iPhone.
Well, there you go. And I urge you to buy a leather case iPod or whatever your smartphone device or tablet device, so you have that leather book smell, because that's the library smell, right?
Yeah.
All right, Doug. Well, this has been a joy, and you know, we could probably spend hours, but we got to close this up. So I want to thank you for joining us, Doug, and thank you for dropping knowledge on me and the listeners. So thanks for listening to the Valor Podcast. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, or any other podcast management app. You can go to thevalorpodcast.com. You can find us on Facebook and find your mission. There's a lot of veteran organizations and nonprofits that are looking for your help with veterans and veteran affairs. Also,